Okay, let's start the next talk. My name is Marek Vašur, and today it's going to be a slightly different kind of talk. Hold on a sec. Better. It will be a slightly different kind of talk because I'll be talking about not U-boot, but ARM SCP firmware porting this time. And just out of curiosity, how many of you do know what the SCP firmware is all about? Very few people. Excellent. So I have a motivational slide to give you some sort of a context what this is even all about before I plunge into the porting part. Hey, so contemporary embedded SoCs, they do no longer have only an A core, which is running Linux, but they also have M cores. The M cores are running some sort of an RTOS, and the issue is all these cores share resources, clock, pin controller, and traditionally there was no arbitration, or there was some sort of an arbitration in hardware which was done using hardware spin locks, this kind of stuff. But the motivation, the original idea was that everyone is well behaved, the RTOS is well behaved, the Linux is well behaved, and they cooperate not to mess up the system state. Nowadays, with push towards security and isolation and so on, we can no longer depend on that, so we need some sort of an proper arbitration. Also, the policies which govern whether one of the cores or the other core should be able to do some action with the system, they are increasingly more complex, so there has to be some more capable arbiter. And this more capable arbiter is called an SCP on newer SoCs. And it's nothing really special. It's yet another core, which is usually Cortex-M or Cortex-R. It's running some sort of a firmware, and it exposes interfaces to the A cores, to the M cores, or whatever other CPU cores you have on your system. The arbiter core, the SCP, is responsible for managing those clock, the pin mooks, potentially regulators, whatever. It has access to this hardware. And all the other cores, the A cores running Linux, the M cores running RTOS, they talk to this SCP arbiter core and ask requests via some sort of a protocol. The other cores, they technically can manipulate with the hardware as well, but it's usually blocked by trust zone for security reasons. So they cannot mess up the system state. And they have to go through this arbiter. So the arbiter core SCP exposes some sort of interface toward all the cores. There is usually some bidirectional communication channel based on mailbox and shared memory, although it can be something else. It's traditionally that. It works in such a way that the A cores or the M cores send commands to the arbiter, and the arbiter responds with some sort of a response. Or the arbiter, which is the SCP, can send notifications to the A cores, to the M cores that something happened, and the A cores and M cores acknowledge it. The commands are used for things like, okay, I'm an A core, I want the arbiter to enable some clock, or I want the arbiter to turn on a regulator or whatever. The arbiter in response says, yeah, okay, action happened, or no, action didn't happen, denied, because you cannot do this. The notifications go the other way, from the SCP to the A cores, M cores, and this is used, for example, for shutdown notifications. So when the system is shutting down, for some reason, maybe it overheated, it sends a notification to all the cores, which says, hey, I'm going down, shutdown is happening, do your thing. On the Linux side, for example, this is handled internally, then it triggers some sort of stuff in user space, systemd does its own shutdown thing, and then the kernel says, okay, it's shut down. That's why the notifications are there for. Now, the protocol that's running on top of this bidirectional channel between the SCP and the A cores and M cores is usually SCMI, System Control and Management Interface. It's defined in ARM specification. If you download the slides, you can get the latest version of the specification as of today. And it's actually not a single protocol, the SCMI, it's a collection of protocols. There is always going to be one protocol in the SCMI, which is the base protocol, and the base protocol then allows the Linux on the A cores or the RTOS on the M cores to discover what actually is supported by the SCP. The base protocol reports things like version of the SCP provider, SCMI provider. It reports the vendor of the SCMI provider, which can be used, for example, to apply quirks. Linux uses this to apply quirks in case the implementation of the SCMI protocol provider is broken in some weird way. But it also gives you the information which other protocols are supported by the SCMI implementation. The other protocols which can be supported by the SCMI implementation are clock protocol, regulators, sensors, power domains, all kinds of these things. There is like 15 of them. You can find the complete list in the specification. The communication with every one of these protocols is command-based, so there is a bunch of commands in every one of these protocols. And this is something which every client, that means Linux on the A core, RTOS on the M cores, can invoke. All right. Let's talk about the other side of it. That is the SCMI protocol provider, which is an SCP firmware that's running on the SCP control processor. Sorry. Now, the SCP firmware, unfortunately, on most SoCs you will find nowadays is not going to be open. It's some sort of a closed source stuff, which is written by the vendors. Some vendors did open it, but it's their own handwritten custom code. But increasingly, there is a push to make it properly open, and there is actually already an existing project from ARM, which is called ARM SCP firmware, and this is BSD3 clause, and we'll talk about this one because we do not care about the non-free and closed source implementations. Keep in mind that if something is non-free and it's closed source, it will usually be very buggy, so just, you don't want that. I guess I don't have to spell it out to this audience. So let's talk about ARM SCP firmware. What is this? It's a project which is actually hosted by ARM. It's a BSD3 clause licensed. It's very much self-contained. All you need to compile it is a valid cross-compiler toolchain. It only depends on newlib nano, libgcc, and stdlib, which means if you have some valid ARM non-EAV toolchain, you can just compile this and get a valid executable out of it. The ARM SCP firmware can actually run on more than just Cortex-M. It can also run on ARC64, but in general, the Cortex-M is the prime target for this. The base code is super simple. It's effectively two functions which call itself until it reaches a main loop. So it's really easy to understand what's going on in there. Everything else in the ARM SCP firmware is then extended by adding modules. So pretty much everything in the SCP firmware is some sort of a self-contained module, which you can include in the build or not include in the build. There's a lot of modules which are part of the SCP firmware code base, which is convenient because a lot of them are generic. Some of them implement the SCMI protocol base. Some of them implement the additional SCMI protocols which follow the standard, so you don't have to re-implement this yourself and you don't have to reinvent the wheel, which is convenient. And there are actually two ways how to port the SCP. I'll choose the easier way. One of the ways is that you can have the SCP actually do the full platform initialization. That means it acts as a bootloader, as a BL2. This is the more complex way. The SCP will then compile two binaries, one of them which is really the full bootloader, which does the platform initialization, pinmux initialization, drum initialization, all of this stuff, and then the second stage will actually run as the SCP and handle all the requests on the SCMI protocol and responses and so on. But since bootloaders generally do a better job at bootloading, we can skip the first part and only focus on the second part. That means only port the SCP and let bootloader actually initialize the platform and start the SCP on the SCP core. This has additional benefit because by the time we start the SCP firmware, we will have UART initialized. So if we need to start doing some printk debugging, or printf debugging, which is awesome, we just can, because we can start writing into the UART FIFO and we will start getting characters right out of the UART. Oops. So yeah, I'll opt for the simpler option, which is only port the SCP. And before we go into that, I still want to go through some terminology. Hey, if you start porting SCP, basically read the documentation. The documentation is very short, very concise. It's a very good idea to read at least that, because it gives you the overall concept, how this whole code base is structured and how it looks. And it gives you about these five keywords which are being used in this documentation, which define the core keywords in the SCP code base. The important ones are framework, which is essentially the whole code base. Then that is module. A module is a self-contained piece of code which does something. It can be a driver. It can be some sort of a service provider, like an SCMI protocol, SCMI clock protocol implementation. An element is an instance of module. That means if you have, say, a UART driver, which is a module, the element would be an instance of this module which has some sort of an instance-specific data attached to it. Say it's the UART driver which is attached to your specific UART IP at address, blah, blah, blah. That's what the element is. It has it's like, in terms of Linux kernel, module would be the driver, the element would be the driver instance. That's what it is. Internally, the SCP does message passing, so there are events and notifications. Events are messages which can be exchanged between two elements. Notifications are the same thing, but a broadcast. And that's pretty much all you need to know to grok what's going on in the SCP internally. Now, porting the SCP firmware itself is also actually super easy, because all you have to do is clone the sources, look into the product directory. There is a bunch of example products already. Find one which is similar to what you have in your SOC, what core you have in there. Duplicate it, rename it, make a commit. Then once you have this, compile the result and verify that you can actually get a binary out of it. If you have a binary at this point, then you effectively have some sort of an executable which you can't still run on your hardware, but you know that you at least managed to fork a platform and you can compile something. You get a valid result. The next step is to actually figure out whether this binary could even potentially run on your hardware at all. That means grab the binary, run it into object dump, disassemble the binary and have a look at the entry point address. Then look into your documentation and your data sheet and figure out whether your Cortex-M, which you will use as an SCP, has this matching entry point address. If it doesn't, then look into the forked product directory. There is a bunch of headers which allow you to define the entry point address. Change it, recompile it, and verify again. At this point, you will have a binary which is most likely going to be executable on your hardware because it has the right memory map. Now, once you have that, you need to figure out how to start it on your platform. This, unfortunately, is port-specific or SOC-specific, so this is something you need to figure out based on your SOC documentation. If you have JTAG access, that's excellent. You can load it into memory and start it on the core directly, whatever came out of the build. If you don't have JTAG access, you will probably have to write this binary somewhere into storage, into flash, and then somehow start it on the SCP core. This is, yeah, SOC specific, so this you need to figure out. But once you figure this out, then the next step is to validate that there are any signs of life. And to get this information, whether your code is actually executing, you need to know where to put some sort of a marker to get these signs of life. And for that, you should look into the init code or init process for the SCP. The init process for the SCP is, in fact, super simple because what it does is it enters, main function in the argmain.c right after C runtime has been configured. The main function runs through. It's a super short function. It calls fvk arg-init. That one runs through, and then ultimately it calls fvk run main loop, and this is the main loop, which is then the runtime of the SCP. It's literally these two functions which you need to analyze and figure out whether you are running code in there or not. The best thing you can do is put some sort of a marker at the very beginning of the main function, and what kind of marker would that be? Well, the easiest you can do is make use of the fact that a bootloader has now initialized your system, including a UART, so you should be able to write characters into UART FIFO. The simplest marker to denote some sort of a signs of life from the SCP is basically to write a character into the UART FIFO and wait for it to appear on your serial console. And this you can do with a plain and simple memory write somewhere at the beginning of the main function, just like that. Of course, if you have a JTAG access, then that's much easier, because with JTAG access, you can stop the core and figure out where it's executing. If you don't have JTAG access, then this is the next best thing. Now, once you have this printing primitive, you can add more of these simple outputs throughout the main function, throughout the arginit function, until you reach the main loop. And you can effectively debug the whole init process using simple print markers. Since the init process is not complex, it's doable. Now, once you actually reach the main loop, we probably need to formalize somehow the UART driver. And this is done by wrapping it into a module of type driver. So a module is defined in the following way. There is a structure which is called fwk underscore module, which is a bunch of callbacks. It has to be type driver. It has two callbacks at the very beginning, which are relevant to us. One of them is init, one of the other one is element init. The difference is that when the system is going through the init process, it initializes the module itself using the init callback, and then every module instance is initialized using the element init callback. Now, the module has an I/O adapter, which is optional. For UART, we will make use of it, and we will fill in the I/O functions into the I/O adapter so that when any sort of printing happens within the SCP, it goes into the I/O adapter and then out of your UART. The functions are very simplistic. Open, putsy, close. You will be interested in the putsy function, where you will get a character from the internals of the SCP, which you are supposed to put on the UART. So this is where you will do exactly the same write as happened before in the simple debugging function, but now you will do it in a more formal way within the module, in the putsy function. Now, this is not all of it, because at this point, you have a module, but you need to instantiate it, turn it into an element. This is done by including the module in the build. This is done by including the module in the build, by patching a bunch of CMake files. But this is still not all of it, because in the product directory, you have to define the element private data. This stuff. The element private data, they are used to parameterize the module instances. That means the elements, in case of UART, it could be for example, the UART base address, the baud rate of the of this UART instance. So it's that. Yup. Now, once you have these things in place, it's important to test the UART module and the instance of it. Now, the SCP has a print buffer internally. That means whenever you do some sort of a printing within the SCP, and this may be surprising, it goes actually into a print buffer internally. And after the main loop does one sort of a round, that only then the print buffer gets printed out, which is not very practical when testing UART driver, because you will do some sort of printing and suddenly it's not going anywhere, it's not appearing on the UART at all. So you can actually circumvent it by calling the FWK IO putsy, which will go directly into the UART output. It will skip the print buffer. For that, all you have to do is prepare some sort of a local string, which you then feed into the UART print buffer. Now, with that finished, what are the next steps? Hey, let's summarize this. What we did now is we effectively did a port of the SCP, which is running on the SCP core. It has some sort of printing facility, and it's running in the main loop. So you have a module, you have element, which is instance of the module, and it's running on your SCP core. The next steps are to add, in a similar way, a mailbox module, which will allow you to communicate with the other cores through the mailbox and shmem. And then on top of that, it's all generic then. The SCMI module, then on top of that, SCMI clock protocol module, and so on. With the clock protocol module, reset modules, there is one other detail which you need to be aware of, because if you are adding SCMI clock protocol module, this is generic, but you need a matching module which is a clock driver specific for your platform, and this has to expose an API to which the SCMI clock protocol module binds. In the documentation, you will find how this ABI binding is described, but there is also a bunch of examples within the SCP code base itself. Word of caution, when you are adding clock protocol and clock bindings, keep in mind that what you are defining is an ABI which is facing your users. It's an ABI that's facing Linux, it's ABI facing your RTOSs, and this ABI has to be immutable, you cannot change it. So when you are defining this, be very careful how you are defining this. A very good way to do this is to add it incrementally. That means when you define some sort of an SCMI clock, define only the minimum subset and verify that Linux can use them successfully, verify that RTOSs are happy with them, and only then add them into your SCP and expose them to users. Do not expose everything at once, because you will make mistakes and they will be hard to correct. So add things gradually as you test them. All right, with that, let's summarize this. It is possible to have an open SCP implementation. The code which is currently available is BSD3 clause, so it's open. And yeah, the port can be implemented incrementally. And when you do so, be very mindful of the ABI which you are exposing to the Linux kernel and your RTOSs and so on. With that, thank you for your attention, and do you have any questions?
Thank you. Do you have TFA doing like SCMI proxying, or do you speak SCMI directly to the coprocessor?
Ah, that's actually a good question. So the question was whether I'm talking to TFA and then TFA talks to the SCP, or whether I directly talk to the SCP from all the clients, right? So on the platform that I'm working on, which is the upcoming SoC from Renesas, this is all the clients directly talk to the SCP. That means TFA talks to the SCP, U-boot talks to the SCP, Linux talks to the SCP, the RTOSs talk to the SCP. And the SCP is the manager of the overall platform policy. Thank you.